I have of late, and wherefore I know not, lost all my mirth.
We're up the pub. what pub is it?
It's the Falcon in Huntingdon. It's been here since 1655, allegedly.
And it has Providence.
Providence?
Like an interesting history.
Oh, it does indeed.
Come on then, tell me what it is.
Well, Oliver Cromwell once, well, it was Oliver Cromwell's headquarters, apparently, and he gave one of his famous speeches from the upstairs window to all the people in the market square outside.
What kind of person was Oliver Cromwell?
He was a revolutionary. We like revolutionaries, don't we, Christian?
Was he a good revolutionary?
Or a bad revolutionary? Well, I don't know.
Do you believe in his politics?
I would have to say that he was anti-royalist, so you can take what you will from that, but
from your smile or from
yes, obviously that doesn't trait well into audio.
No, but that's why I said it.
There was a big grin when I said that. He was anti-royalist. I may or may not be anti-royalist, depending on who's listening.
Yeah, exactly. And this is an interesting point you make, because we're living in very interesting times, and that a lot of people travelling the world are deciding as to whether or not they should delete many of their internet spaces before they go to certain parts of the world, should we say. Yeah. Well, only one, really. Yeah. There is only one part in the world right now which has the potential to become
an fascist state.
I was going to say autocracy, which is Syria is an autocracy. Yeah. If you think about what's happening in Syria right now, there is a government you can't really get out because they're making up the rules. There is a president who is surrounding themselves with very, very rich people. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
There seem to be parallels in at least one other country.
Yeah, and and so I would say we are entering very exciting times. For all the wrong kind of excitement.
Like, I know it's
sphincter-based excitement.
It's a horrible cliche, but the Chinese curse of "May you live in interesting times" is
it's coming true.
It's. I mean, we couldn't get much more interesting. No. I think without it being hoarding water and canned goods interesting.
Yeah, I definitely don't have enough. Water, actually. I've got water purification gear, yeah. So I can, and I've got water butts, and I have on YouTube.
I've seen your butt. There's
it's definitely watery. It is after all this ale tonight. I mean, these guys have so many ales on tap. I'm still suffering from a particular ale I had in the castle in Manchester a couple of nights ago. Right. Stephen, if you're listening, we're here tonight. Because tomorrow is my birthday.
How old are you going to be?
45.
So every day you wake
Please
up
Please, cue the sad music.
Exactly. That was almost perfect. Yeah. So every day you wake up, you go closer to 50 than you are to 40.
Yeah, but that's life, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's not, I don't find that. I mean, I got over that, actually, with 40. I'm glad that I have those ever so slight nudges of, you don't look your age, you don't look your age, you don't look your age, because as I don't know, transient and not that important as they are on a philosophical sense, you can't help but have your ego massaged. And I've been thinking about this whole, I'm going to get philosophical very quickly, very deeply. So, when I was travelling for many, many years, and you've done an awful lot of travelling, and we've travelled to some very similar places, but you've actually spent longer in places. I was a fleeting, let's do as many countries as I can, and you were, I'm going to live in Thailand for a year and learn the language. Which is super, got lots of respect for that. I, particularly around Thailand and Southeast Asia, I really felt that I had an idea of who I was. Like the self, and what my inner and true self was. And then to fit back into society, I had to let all of that go. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, it makes perfect sense. I think that
Like, a lot of people call it the authentic self.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a total cliche about this sort of finding yourself when you go away to travel. Like most cliches, it has elements of truth in it, and I think that one of the
Why is that?
Why do most cliches have elements of truth in them?
No. Why is it that, I mean, a lot of people are in routine, and that routine means that they are living a cycle. Travel eradicates all of that. The whole act of moving in itself is every day is different. You don't know what's going. You have the chance. You're forced into being more present, I think. That's when you discover yourself. That's why I think travel, like for many people, taking mind-expanding drugs does the same thing.
Well, it's about having the space to do it, right? Because I think we're all very good at distracting ourselves. And I know that I do it. That if there's something that I don't want to think about, it's very easy to not think about it. But if your whole life is like that, that it's very easy to wake up and be married to someone you don't want to be married to for 20 years, or being in a job that you hate for 10 years. But when you travel, all of that structure is removed and you're stripped back to, there is no structure, you have to make your own structure, and you also spend large amounts of time not having anyone to talk to, not having TV that you can watch that you understand. So all of your distractions are removed. Maybe less so now. That's another conversation about whether that's true now
because of the
interwebs. But certainly when we were doing it a lot, you were stepping into another world. And so all of those distractions, so you have to think about things because you're alone by yourself for several hours a day, unless you make it otherwise.
And that's really interesting, this kind of, because I do think that once you understand who you are, where you're coming from, what it is you want, that's where contentedness, happiness, whatever, comes from. And there's a news article I was looking at today where they discovered a way of communicating with people with locked-in syndrome.
I saw it too.
And yes, they only got a 70% accuracy off repeatedly asking the same question, but almost unanimously, these people were happy. Now, I was like, well, how did you phrase the question? Are you happy that we're talking to you now? Or are you actually happy of being isolated in within your mind? Now, could it be that without being able to move, you are effectively in the ultimate solitary confinement and you cannot do anything but, you know, is it pontificate? Is that too religious a term? That's got to have religious origins, doesn't it, with pontiff in it? You cannot do anything but get to the true essence of the authentic self.
Yeah, well, I think I was very shocked by that. That, I mean, it's one of those sort of the news is to me like reading the Daily Mail these days. But that was a very interesting news item, and that was the most interesting thing about it, that all those people, 70% of them, said they were happy. Mm. Because that's shocking, because you imagine that someone who's in a locked-in state isn't going to be that happy. That's not something that, and for me, that's a terrifying thought.
Mm. And but yet, boiled down, you've got time to think about, well, worst case scenario is I don't exist.
Yeah. And then, and you've got worse, all those distractions removed. So, I mean, I think there are definitely parallels with other experiences that allow you space to truly think about, exist in your own mental space without Facebook or, you know, Grey's Anatomy, or, you know.
You've mentioned Grey's Anatomy to me off the microphone tonight. Do you actually watch Grey's Anatomy?
I've watched every episode of Grey's Anatomy since season one, episode one.
Never seen it.
Oh, good Lord. Shonda Rhimes, that's all that is.
completely missed that reference, but I imagine it's a woman.
She's the writer. It's my next tattoo. Right, actually going to have Shonda Rhimes tattooed on me, just because she's one of the greatest TV writers of our generation.
So you just said next tattoo, which paints another facet of your personality. I haven't even said your name.
No,
I'm Adrian.
I'm Adrian.
Story, good name, with an E though.
Everybody knows who you are, right? You don't have to say you're
Well, it's on my channel, so I imagine Christian Payne documentary will pop up. This is a neglected account, but today is February. This is Audio Boo, or well, actually Audio Boom now, but February as a continuation of every, you're meant to do a recording every day. And I thought, if I don't do it now, after a multitude of beers, that's why we're talking about the self, then I won't do it at all. And I think when I put my mind to something, which is nothing, 28 recordings. It's not a leap year, is it? 28 recordings. I can do that. You're not allowed to do them all in a day. You've got to do one a day.
I reckon.
I can handle that. It's just whether or not there's anything interesting to talk about. This has already trumped. There's a word that's been ruined. Ruined. This has already trumped yesterday's, which was me in my shed. Which
it's
most
very
of the
nice
recordings
shed,
will happen.
To say, but just,
you're rare for anybody to actually get to visit the inner sanctum. It's like it's almost sexual in a non-sexual way.
I feel slightly privileged, and I'll remember to wear a condom next time.
On your head, please.
But going back to our discussions about the self and finding yourself and all of those things, I think that. I lived in Japan for 10 years, and I think one of the things that, of the many things that troubled me, but one of the things that troubled me about that is a sort of sterile approach to what it means to be a person. What I mean by that is that now that I've come back to England, one of the very interesting things for me is that everyone has an understanding of the fact that a situation can turn nasty. So if you bump into someone in the supermarket, generally both people say sorry, unless one of them's a... Am I allowed to swear or anything?
I'll have to put not safe for work.
Okay.
Don't say the C word if you can help it.
Unless one of them's not very
nice. You can
say
wanker.
Okay, well, wanker. Yeah. Unless one of them's a wanker, both people say sorry, but that is part of what that is about, is that people understanding that you have no idea who that person you've just bumped into is, or how they're going to react, or and that they could be bad, they could be a nasty person. And so one of the things that I think that I discovered about myself by doing all of those traveling and allowing myself space, because was that I have a dark side.
Yeah.
And that everyone has a dark side.
I know, but when does that come out? And this is the key here. What you're touching upon is something I've been thinking about along the lines of, I am what I think you think I am. So my personality and my behavior is going to be multifaceted depending on my environment. When you go to Japan, you are, whether you like it or not, you're a different person to who you are sitting here with me, because you already have maybe the heckles up, because you're not necessarily accepted because of being an outsider. Your Twitter name is Uchujin, and that it means alien, because of your recognition of the fact that you will never be accepted as a Japanese person.
But do you not...
though you speak fluent.
One of the things that I think that, again, to reference our earlier thing, is that one of the things about finding out who... discovering something about who you are is not ever really... For me, was not ever really apologising about that. Mm. Right? So, I think when I'm sat... For example, when I'm sat here with you, I feel a great sense of freedom in that I have zero barriers about who I am.
Well, you've told me some dark stuff, though, already.
No, but not... Okay.
So I know some...
Joking
some...
around, it's all very
well. Well, you mean
good.
You haven't told me the really dark stuff?
No, that's way, way worse than that.
Oh, God.
But what I mean is that there's... If we can go from one moment talking about Ruby on Rails and, you know, the latest VR technology, and then the next moment that it can be about you know, a big black woman with a strap on. Those are the that conversation could jump from there to there, and I don't feel any barrier between those two subjects.
And yet we've spoke about neither of these two things.
No, we haven't talked about it, but we could if we wanted to.
Yes, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
but I think that that's part of that finding who you are is not having to make a barrier somewhere. I know that I can talk to you about these things, but I can't talk to you about those things, and so I'm going to put a little wall there internally. I hate that internal wall. Yeah. I hate it more than anything else in the world, because I just think I don't.
Do you think art is the great liberator? Because if we both see what the world as almost like art playing out before us, life imitating art, and all the rest of it, then kind of anything goes, because it becomes just a fascinating facet of reality.
Yeah, I don't think anything's taboo, and I think art taught us that somehow.
Comedians. If comedy is art.
Big up Frankie Boyle.
Oh, God.
Big up Chunky Mark.
Chunky Mark, I introduced Jim, I remember that. But who's the other guy that's super dry, who, when he talks, I'm terrible because I can't remember his name, but one of the comedy geniuses, everybody looks up to this guy, even though you probably wouldn't think of him as a comedian, because he just delivers a narrative. And
David Attenborough?
No. No, definitely don't think of him as a comedian.
I'm sure he's pretty funny.
Yeah, probably. I know, I've met him, and he was signing books, and he was very grumpy.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I'm sure that's because he was had a full day of signing books.
I almost wish Frankie there was Boyle some way to do like a timeout. I'm doing the time sign on my hand there's a really funny story about some comedians that I can't tell you if it's going out in a public place.
Fair enough. Just bookmark it for in a minute.
I'll bookmark that for later.
Keep looking at my phone, which is sat on the table. And for those of you that are interested, how we are recording in a very noisy pub. There's a massive puddle of puddle of beer which fell out of my glass and sitting on my waterproof iPhone 7. I hope it's waterproof. And I've got the adapter going from the lightning socket, because I don't have a headphone socket, going into,
fuck you, Apple.
God, it's the Rode, what is it? SC6, which enables us to have two lav mics plug straight into the lightning connector. And that sound you can hear is a very gadgety e-pipe.
Vape. It's a vape.
He's vaping. Is that what it's called? A vape?
Yeah.
He's vaping. And when did you quit smoking?
Smoking 3 years ago.
Okay. After 20 years.
Yeah.
And you still haven't died from popcorn lung.
No.
Which people say is a myth, but
it is a myth.
How do you know that?
Because I've done a lot of research, because I smoked for 20 years and I didn't want to replace one addiction that was going to definitely going to kill me with another one that was probably going to kill me. So I did a lot of research, before I moved to vaping.
So where did popcorn lung come from?
It was, well,
from the tobacco industry trying to stop people vaping.
Well, I mean, if you were going to be cynical, yes, but no, I'm sure popcorn lung is a thing, but I don't think there's any evidence that links it to vaping, and I also think it's incredibly tiny percentage of people who've had it.
Oh, right.
And that...
It sounds tasty, though.
It doesn't.
Not that I've eaten a lung, but I've eaten liver.
Oh,
not human ones. You're veggie. For how long?
25 years.
25 years? No way! Which brings me nicely on a segue to a tape I found, which is me 25 years ago. The birth of your vegetarianism. I was writing really bad poetry. Well, I say really bad. I mean, some of it I actually listened back to and I thought, I don't even know what that word is now. I must have specifically looked that up to drop that into a poem and think I sounded smart. But there was one piece that actually moved me while I dug out a cassette and plugged it into my new Nakamichi thing. And that was me with my first thoughts on... I'd literally gone back in the house and I'd wrote it down and recorded it after I saw my first dead person die.
Oh.
And I'd heard a car accident in the street, and I ran out in the street and two lads, And I explain them in this poem as, it's not a poem, I just wrote it down and then read it out. Two kids, the kind that would taunt you from a distance. And they were both riding the same bicycle. One was giving the other one a backy. And they got hit by a car. And I remember being the first on the scene and holding the guy who wasn't screaming. Because I felt that he was the one that wasn't going to survive. And the ambulance came and picked them up and literally just loaded him like a carcass. And he didn't survive. I think he was alive while I was holding him, as far as the writing goes. And the other guy actually lived, and they didn't tell him that his mate had died in the hospital. And then I talk about how I saw them in, like, there's an update on the audio recording when I saw him in the newspaper, and that photo is not how I knew these kids. It was such a weird moment of me trying to get my head around this transient. This is in Rugby, Parkfield Road to be precise. And I keep meaning to actually Google, because it was 1992, so 1991 or 1991 maybe. I guess it didn't go on the web initially, we'll have to see. Because it wasn't until maybe three or four that a lot of the smaller newspapers started digitising things.
The first time I ever saw a dead body was in India. In Varanasi, Banardes, however you want to explain
it. I got very close to the oldest civilised city in the world, Varanasi. Yeah.
Where devout Hindus go to die. But I remember going down and standing on the burning ghats and just seeing someone being carried down there and standing there for 2 hours. And
you've got to remember the burning ghats were for people that could afford to be burnt. Because there were the towers or the higher areas where the bodies would be laid out and you'd be picked to bits by the birds. And they would watch to see which eye went first, depending on whether you were going up or somewhere else. I remember going and watching the kite, the kite festival in Varanasi, and that I just arrived, and it was the most surreal place, because it was like going back 1,000 years, and the whole of the sky was filled with like an orange smoke because the sunset was just filtering through all the bonfires and the fires that were just burning pretty much all the time. But in amongst all of these plumes of smoke were kites, like twirling and twisting, homemade, handmade kites. And I wanted a better shot, and I had a little Canon Ixus APS camera, which I regret still to this day ever buying such a crappy camera. And I couldn't get a view, and I stood on this thing to get a higher view, and as I stood on this thing to look over the top of the roof of the hostel I was in, the thing I was standing on went and it was a body wrapped, ready for burning. And I realised I was standing on a very old lady,
you just squeezed the
last
the
breath
air
out of a corpse. That's in my diary. It's the only reason why I remember it now, because we're going back to it again, 1993 I think that was.
Benares is a very strange place. I spent quite a long time there, and it's one of the weirdest cities I've ever spent any length of time in. I had the weird dreams.
I must tell you when we've stopped recording, because I have a micro cassette of an incident after, for some stupid, I was with an Australian guy at the time, my best mate at the time, called Shane. And when asked whether we wanted the small, the medium, or the large Bang Lassi, I dialed him right down from the large to the medium. And yet it was still, I mean, Ankh-Morpork Pork from Terry Pratchett novels was what occurred for over a day after that.
I spent about a month in pushcar.
Starting
on mild and ending up on strong. And then
was enough for me.
By the end of the month, I was going back to the guy and having two strongs a day.
I couldn't even imagine what my mind would have snapped. It was a very, very, and the fact that I've got a lot of it on tape.
I'm speaking to a guy
with a Kalashnikov. I really need to dig that out and digitize that. The stuff I've got that's offline. Because it's weird. I didn't realize how early I started documenting. I've got diaries going, you know, from the 80s, but it's dangerous having all this digital media at your disposal.
It is. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, I'm quite impressed that you have all that stuff going back that far, because I have photographs.
I mean, the early stuff is just, I did this, I did that. There's no, I felt this and I felt that, but I can kind of hint from...
No, well, I think that's enough a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you need the trigger. You need the trigger of that day, I did this, I did that. And a lot of the time for me, I mean, my memory is appalling it's appalling.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, there are triggers of, oh, do you remember that day when that happened? No, I don't. But when you sell it to me somewhere, it's filed away.
You say that, I've realized that when we remember something, we are creating that thing. And there are memories I have of traveling when I speak to the people I was traveling with, not completely different, but there's some fundamentally different facts around that particular story. And quite often, the story's even more amazing than I remember it, which is nice. And yet, you know, I need to, if ever I do write up a lot of this stuff, get a lot of like witness testimonies.
No, yeah, well, I was thinking about the other day, after talking to you actually, that I have memories. I say memories, and I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers, because I have memories that I'm not sure if that's actually what happened, or whether that's a fabrication in my head of something that happened, and I've told the story so many times that it's mutated into something else, because I don't have any record of it. I only have my memory of it, and I know that I don't embellish a story, but you know, a story gets told a certain number of times, and you know, I look at photographs and think, I remember that. Actually, I don't remember that. What I remember is, I remember the photograph of that. Yeah. And
there's some stories you have that don't need embellishing. The wrestling of a lion.
Yeah.
Just wrestling of a lion. That's four, wrestling of a lion. That is four words, which are already like a story in itself.
Yeah.
Like how, why, when. And you'd probably have to listen to Adrian's podcast to get the nitty gritty on that, but it is a good story. Good job it was that line and not the other one.
Exactly.
And this, again, there's also so many stories which I probably wouldn't ever tell. And a small part of my, of all of my multifaceted selves, the most ego-driven, it would say, why let that story die? And so I am seriously contemplating, with an air gap computer, I'm glad you're nodding, you understand totally what an air gap computer is, some offline device, maybe even paper, you know, typing up some of the coolest stuff that I might not necessarily share. And that might sound not authentic, because I'm concerned of people judging me off the back of that story. But there's people that were alive I wouldn't necessarily want to drop in it. That's why I wouldn't necessarily share these stories right now. And then finding some way of creating a time lock so that they can't be told until years after your death. I really like the idea of that, because there is, you know, there's plenty of comments and phrases out there of, you know, you live as long as people mention your name. There are some people I would really, truly like to keep alive in the minds through the stories or the things they did, which were above and beyond what you might, you know, deem as right or legal, or they might be embarrassing for them in their current lives. That's just amazing, amazing individuals. And one guy I can tell you without giving his name was like, I could only describe him as an ethical drug trafficker. The way that the laws are positioned nowadays, a person that only ever worked, I met this person when I was traveling, I wasn't involved with him in any business way. Look at me, already distancing myself. But I would listen to his stories, and I desperately wanted to document the way that he worked, because he kept entire villages like fed and clothed and sustained. and yet he only ever served a particular group of people. And it's such a fantastic story. And yeah, I wouldn't want to put that person in any, you know, after the event danger. And you must have a few of those.
Yeah.
He says, not even going into any more depth.
No. But yes, I mean, I think it's, you're a better man than I am, because I think that a lot of those stories, I just, at some point, I think I've got so many of them that are so crazy that you just want somehow to share them. I mean, we live in an oversharing kind of economy, but it's oversharing what I had for breakfast, whereas both of us have some interesting stories from doing some very, some interesting things. We both did some stuff and lived some kind of experiences that, you know, those things are worth sharing because of the people that were involved in them, not necessarily because of us, but because of the people that were involved in those stories.
And there's an entertainment value.
No, of course.
And in a world where we're entertained by the unreal, I take great solace from, this is a story about a human being learning actually experiencing and becoming better from or worse from this particular experience. There's nothing better than the truth of what might happen, because it is better than fiction. It is better than the fabricated. It is better than the trumped up to get that click, that link click.
You said that word again.
Oh God, he's ruined it for me. Oh no, it will always mean fart as far as I'm concerned. It will always mean fart.
Yes, I think that it should forever mean fart, even now.
Yes, we should have the world Trump records. We should have, oh, that's lowered the tone somewhat. I can't wait to see, in some ways, how the next 3 years are going to pan out. I'm going to predict something right now, okay? So, I predict that right now, inside a certain Republican Party, there is epic discord. Like, people want to cut the head off the snake, but they realize that if they do it now, second in command will take over, and they won't necessarily be able to get a second term. So what they are doing is they are waiting for the first, I can't remember what the law is exactly, first year to pass, and then they cut off the head of the snake. Then the second in command can not only carry out that the rest of those years,
but can run
for a second term. That is, I'm not saying I've heard anything from the inner sanctum, because that would be giving up some weird confidences, but that is, weirdly, hope on this.
But how many days are we in?
Oh God, no! I read that. I translated that in my head. It was, how much damage can somebody do in that time?
Yeah, I mean, we're what, eight days in?
Huge amount.
8 days in.
And today there was almost a war breakout with Iran.
So we're 8 days in, and he's already done what he's done already. And so you're talking about giving the guy a year? I say cut the head off the body. Right, goddamn now.
I had this really weird dream. Really weird dream where somebody created a.
Was it a snake eating itself? Because Kepler had that dream.
No. This was a genetically modified. I don't want to say the word assassin. Yeah. A genetically modified targeted drug thing. Because you can do that nowadays.
Right.
You know, that's what I dreamt.
Only attacks one person.
Yeah. Oh, I had a really interesting discussion with. A coffee maker the other day, because there was an experiment recently where students in, it wasn't Loughborough, it was begin with an L, I think, they were experimenting on how caffeine helped students study, and instead of taking 0.03 milligrams, they took 3 or something crazy, and they all went into these convulsive cardiac arrest type things, and very or nearly died, and it was over the 16 milligrams of pure caffeine that can kill a person. It might not be 16 grams. forget the science around this, there is a certain amount of caffeine that is totally toxic, gives you an instant heart attack. And I spoke to this guy about that, and he goes, yeah, he goes, I'm amazed that, like, certain governments are using, like, polonium and all the rest of it, when really,
you just give
all you need to do is give a massive dose of caffeine, it looks like a heart attack. And I'm like, surely, when they go for the autopsy, there's a massive dose of caffeine in there. He goes, oh, no, I think it's metabolised so
very
quickly.
Very strong espresso.
Yeah, so that is fascinating. And I'm waiting for the news. With very little us plebs, plebitarians, can do about any of this other than sign the protest. Petitions. Thank you. Go to the protests. If you believe in something,
use
enough,
encrypted communications.
Use apps like Signal.
Please,
and Freema, everyone, and
Wire. Use encrypted communications now more than ever. I know PGP was a pain in the arse. None of you wanted to do it. For God's sake, it's so much easier to do now.
Yeah, it's a plug-in for your Apple Mail, and there's Proton Mail, and there's all kinds of other places. I mean, we're not talking about, oh, yeah, you know, because you're plotting and scheming behind the scenes just so that you are comfortable enough to have freedom of imagination, so that you can think the things you want to think without thinking that you're censored constantly. So that you can write to your friends and make jokes like we are. This is all a humor recording. So that you don't censor yourself, because when we censor ourselves, we lose our identity.
No, when it's privacy versus secrecy, there is a big difference between the two things. None of us are talking about secrecy. We're not doing anything that we need to be secret about, but we are doing. It's our right to have private communications with each other. That's our right. I mean,
at the moment, the rights are based on what a lot of people say. Well, the laws, pieces of paper,
I would say that it's our human right to have private communications. Secret communications is something different. That's another ball game. But
if you want secret communications, you don't do anything on the internet, because it doesn't matter how good encryption is now. That secret is broken the moment the super, you know.
Quantum computing kicks in.
Even not so. I mean, I was watching a really good little animation, and I highly recommend it. I mean, if you read my newsletter on ourmaninside.com or documentary.com/newsletter, you'll see that the EFF are doing some really good surveillance toolkits and first aid kits, and they will say that your epic, unique, totally random password is good for everybody outside of the NSA, which is slightly worrying. But it reminds me that, you know, if you want anything to be truly private, you just don't put it on the internet. It's as simple as that.
Ever. Don't put it on a computer at all, let alone the internet.
And the conversations that I've been having for the last 10 years about just this, about when people say, oh, I've got nothing to be scared of. Well, yeah, but what if a fascist government gets in power?
Yeah,
well, that's hardly likely to happen, is it? Huh? Suddenly, we are actually censoring. Well, there's an app been developed so that you can delete all of your favourites, because your favourites will give up whether or not you are into liberal thoughts.
There's a very famous quote from Cardinal Richelieu during the Spanish Inquisition, which was something, and I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember it exactly, obviously, but it's along the lines of, give me six sentences from any man and I'll find a reason to hang him.
Yeah.
So if you only need six sentences...
I've done over 100,000 tweets.
Pretty sure all of us have shared more than six sentences, right? So I think it's not about secrecy, it's about privacy. It's about this stuff is not the concern of big government, multinational conglomerates, targeting whatever ads you're targeting to me. It's not your business what I'm saying to you when I'm not plugged into your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's weird, because this is one of over 1,960 similar recordings. I dread to think over the last, I don't know, when did this start? 2008? What year is it now?
We've got more than enough to hang you.
Oh, big time. And on that night, it's time for me to get a taxi home and start building the bunker. I do actually have to have a semi-early night, i.e. before midnight, because I will be woken up at 7 by children jumping on the bed saying, happy birthday, Daddy.
Oh, well, this is a nice way to wake up. If you're going to be woken up, that's one of the good ways.
One of the good ways.
Minus the children, but that's another story.
Adrian's story is Utujin on Twitter, which is spelt
U-C-H-U-J-I-N.
And I'm slightly concerned about the levels. Have you had to turn the volume up? We've never done this before. Yeah, I'm documentally. Cheers. Bye-bye. Cheers, man.
Bye.